Wade Lightheart is a certified sports nutritionist advisor and is the president slash director of education and co-founder of BioOptimizers. As a plant-based and drug-free athlete for more than two decades, Wade is a three-time national natural bodybuilding champion who competed in both the IFBB Mr. Universe and the INBA Natural Olympia by the age of 31. At the age of 50, Wade came out of retirement to win the Open Men's and Grand Masters categories at the INBA Ironman International, then competed at the PNBA Natural Olympia. 6 months later, Wade successfully ran his first marathon in 4 hours. Really incredible to go from competing in bodybuilding to then competing in a marathon and finishing in under 4 hours, especially at his age. And this episode, you may think, based on his introduction and his credentials, would be focused on fitness, but this episode we focus on diet and nutrition. And Wade is a wealth of knowledge, of course, being the co-founder of BioOptimizers, it makes sense. So in this episode, we discuss Wade's latest book with his partner Matt Gallant, his business partner at BioOptimizers, their latest book called The Ultimate Nutrition Bible. This book is the book to end all diet dogma and diet wars. As you'll hear in this episode, Wade and Matt are on opposite ends of the spectrum when it comes to diet and nutrition, but they both recognize the dogma that is present and the nuance that is required to ensure wellness in the age of diet gurus and diet wars. And that is what helped them birth a book like no other on diet and nutrition. And it really is a Bible. And it's for everyone. It's for anyone on a nutrition or diet journey, which should be virtually all of mankind. So this book is tailored towards literally anyone who's interested in nutrition. And I think if you listen to this podcast, you are likely interested in nutrition. And I also really appreciate that Wade understands, and as we talk about during this episode, that food is probably not the most important thing when it comes to health, although it is still very important, just not the most important thing, and you'll hear about that during the episode. So after listening or while you're listening, be sure to check out the show notes for Wade and Matt's offerings, including the Ultimate Nutrition Bible and also the Ultimate Nutrition System, which we talk about towards the end of this episode. And you can access both of those by visiting ultimatenutritionsystem.com/Alec. And be sure to enter code ALEC10 at checkout for 10% off. And of course, got to give a shout out to BioOptimizers, Matt and Wade's company. These products are incredible. So I don't personally use a lot of supplements, but I actually brought my full stack of supplements here so I can show you guys what I'm doing. So I take P3 Ohm and HCL Breakthrough from BioOptimizers, and you can read more about that on their website. I also take Reishi Turkey Tail Capsules and Dragon's Blood Capsules from Cultivate Elevate, Oyster Max for zinc, and Tongkat Ali, of course, from our podcast sponsors, Organic Muscle, the only organic Tongkat Ali on the planet. And then also beef liver, which is 100% grass-fed beef liver from New Zealand cows that's coming from One Earth. So don't really take a lot of supplements, but these are what I take on a daily basis, and BioOptimizers products, as I share during the episode, in conjunction with my water fast. And I know that, as we shared during this episode, Wade is really big on water fasting as well. So we hit it off on that front. But between my water fast and also taking these products, I historically have had gut issues, and I think these help to resolve the gut issues I was having. So also be sure to visit bioptimizers.com for a wealth of products to suit your unique dietary and nutritional needs. And of course, enter code TWF10 at checkout for 10% off your order. And you can find that also in the show notes. So this episode is awesome. And to be his age and have the level of energy that he has is truly incredible. And we could have gone on for, I think, like 6 hours, but he had to get somewhere, and we'll probably have him back on, hopefully Matt, and hopefully we'll do it in person next time. So thanks again for tuning in, and enjoy this episode. And again, be sure to visit bioptimizers.com and enter code TWF10 at checkout after adding some incredible products to your cart. And then if you're interested in the Ultimate Nutrition Bible or the Ultimate Nutrition System or both, visit ultimatenutritionsystem.com/Alec and enter code ALEC10 at checkout for 10% off your order. Listen to the language of the last 3.5 years. Lockdowns, travel restrictions, stay-at-home orders. This rhetoric, written by government agencies and corporate media, speaks to a clear intention, a concerted effort to keep us in place. Fortunately for us, a real grassroots movement, powered by real men and women, can never be stopped. Because mankind will always find the way forward. And this is where it all starts. With the Way Forward's new membership platform, you can connect with like-minded community and like-minded businesses near you by simply typing in your zip or postal code and setting a radius. We also have a marketplace featuring the best holistic health brands and products with deals you won't find anywhere else. And the best part is, you pay whatever you want to be a part of it. The Way Forward starts with a growing community coming together to share ideas, form local groups, and conduct business with like-minded men and women. Because if we're constantly being told what to do by so-called authorities, it's easy to feel helpless. But it's essential to know that we're not. Each of us has the power, and that power amplifies when we come together. There are many more health-conscious and sovereign-minded men and women than we realize, and this is where we all meet. Visit thewayforward.com to join virtually, connect locally, and pay whatever you want to be a part of it. This is The Way Forward. Wade, thanks for joining me, man. It's an honor to talk with you.
It's always great to be moving forward, and this is the way forward. So I couldn't wait to be here.
There you go. This is the first time I've had an opportunity to like display someone's thing behind me, which is really cool. So we're going to be talking about primarily the Ultimate Nutrition Bible here, and it is a Bible. It is a heavy book, and you laid it out like a Bible, you and Matt. We were just talking before this, though, and I kind of just dropped this, and I heard you mention this on Luke Stories episode, and that was a fantastic episode, talking about the Ultimate Nutrition Bible with Luke, but you've done multiple 10-day water fasts.
Yep.
Talk to me about why, and talk to me about that experience.
Well, I think as someone who endeavors to run personal experiments on health, wellness, performance, nutrition, to ignore the use of fasting throughout history in all different social cultures and the purported benefits of that, both canonized in scientific literature as well as annotations through human recordings. I think I'd be remiss if I hadn't exposed myself to that because it's a curious endeavor. So much of the nutrition industry is focused on what we put into our bodies, and there's a tremendous amount of assumptions based on that and incomplete theories because of the misunderstanding of digestive health. But the idea of a water fast is completely in paradox to many of the tenets of nutrition. So I began to experiment. Now, as a bodybuilder, that's how I got my, you know, so I was a small, thin guy that wanted to get muscles with terrible genetics. And so my whole focus for, well, up, you know, for 15, 20 years, was just about how do I build muscle and how do I work out and how do I stuff enough things in that get manufactured into muscle tissue or burns body fat. But that was the focus. But with fasting, it was a whole other idea. It's like, okay, I got into, I started into health advocacy. I ran into some digestive health problems and there was a spiritual component of experimenting with it. So I said, let's try this. And I began first with 1 day fast, and you have to overcome the psychological aspect. People are freak out. I'm going to starve. I'm going to die. You know, like, God, if I don't eat for a whole day, what happens?
Keep going. I'm going to fix something. Keep going.
Yeah. And going on and experimenting you know, with something that was inverted to almost all of the paradigms I was exposed to, was kind of a nice experiment. So I started with 1 day fasts and cleanses and 2 day fasts, and then went to a 3 day, and then eventually worked my way up to a 10 day fast. And at some point in time, I think I will probably engage in a 40 day, which is kind of like the mother of.
That's what I want to do too. That's what I want to
do. Yeah. Now there may be some consequences of doing a 40 day fast, and there may be some benefits. Usually those are done in extreme health conditions or for serious spiritual, adventures, we'll call it, experiments. I haven't got to that one, but I do 10 day fasts, and I do them usually right. Well, I've done them twice a year regularly for, I don't know how many years.
Can I ask what times a year you do them?
Usually in the spring and the fall.
I knew you were going to say that. It makes total sense too, because as someone who's come to, let's say, question and refute the germ hypothesis, especially with respect to, like, quote, seasonal flus and so-called viral bugs, I've come to understand, and I don't want to go off on a tangent here, that seasonally, it just makes sense that before we go into a period where we're getting less sunlight, less time in nature, more time inside amongst toxic glues, non-native electromagnetic fields, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Multiple holidays, obviously, in the fall, where we just eat like shit, spend time around people we say we love, but we may have some issues with in multiple holidays. It makes sense that our body would want to cleanse itself before we go into that period. And then after we've accumulated so much toxicity over those winter and early spring months, then we also drop off and shed all that we've accumulated. So it makes total sense that you would do it both in the fall and in the spring.
Yeah. And then I really love the benefits. First, the psychological components of recognizing that you will not die if you don't eat food for a few days. I think that in itself is transformative psychologically for most people. Second thing is to recognize how much attention and time we put into food. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Thinking about food, preparing food, shopping for food, reading about food, determining what foods are right. It's like we are a very food-centric culture. And there's evolutionary biological reasons for that we always have to overcome. And then the third thing is to actually be able to watch some of the patterns that one isn't able to overcome in regular life and face them head on without focus. And then watching them dissipate over time and starting to realize, well, who's really in charge of the machine? So those are the early stages of what I learned in fasting. The second thing that I began to think about after I would do this and advocate with my clients, and we'd walk people through various fasts and cleanses and various versions of that, et cetera. And you know, the mother being the big one being the 10-day water fast usually is that's the grand. And I don't suggest people go into it right away. Build yourself up to it. Was, okay, well, what's going on here? That was the question. Like, hey, I'm seeing all these things start to happen. I'm feeling different in my cognition. There's physiological components to it as well. Like, you know, first there's the reduction of NEAT, you know, the kind of cocoon phase. And then there's an overcoming of that where you're like, I'm fine. I can do everything I want.
I stand up paddleboarded on day six on mine.
Right.
Yeah.
So what's going on here? So are we really living on food?
Yeah.
That set me to discover a whole series of principles that I outlined in a course that's on our site for free called the Awesome Formula. And I recognize that food isn't the primary ingredient of life, of living. It's air, it's water, and then it's movement. Those things are more important to the physiological function of the body than the food that you eat. Food, I classify, is condensed sunlight. In other words, it's vibratory frequency, it's a photon, it's a wave, it condenses into matter through density, and starts forming up the carbon structures, et cetera, and vibratory rates, everything that we constitute our food quality. And we decouple that and recouple it into either energy units or building blocks, which in itself has a metabolic cost. So I recognize, first off, my relationship with food and what food actually is much more broader than what most people talk about when they talk about diet. The second thing was, okay, what what is allowing these massive transformations to happen inside of the body during this time? People recovering from various conditions.
Everything.
Everybody talks about the increased light, the radiance that people have on this. Well, what are we actually witnessing? Is that like a projection? And what I've come to conclude is the improved efficiency in mitochondrial function increases the production or the availability of electron covalent transfer, which is a transfer of electrons in the which air, water, movement, and food all create electron transfer inside of the body at varying degrees. Those things produce a certain amount of toxins. The cleaner the energy. So the breatharians are actually have such an efficient system. They do not require food anymore because they have an efficient transfer of energy with very little pollution inside of the system. And the hydration provides the source of the electromagnetic battery source.
Especially with respect to fourth phase water, knowing that fourth phase water is what comprises our cells. Yeah.
Correct. And so now we understand that we're actually an electrical generator that can burn variety of different fuels. Now, there's one element that became paramount to Bioptimizers, our company, and that was inadvertently there are chemical processes in the body. I think this average cell does 6 trillion processes simultaneously or something. It's something insane. Mm-hmm. There's so much things going on in your body. It's not even there's no computer that even can computate what cells, and that cells don't know what everything's going on in the body, everything. But there's an element that's involved in speeding up those transactions, which is a thing called enzymes. And enzymes are little protein structures that are catalysts that improve the speed and efficiency of chemical reactions in the body. So once I got the fasting thing done and had the paradigm shift psychologically, then I was like, okay, well, what else is going on? Can I accelerate the results of fasting? It turns out you can. So if you take what I call super physiological dosages of high potent enzymes on a fast, you can accelerate the results, because I believe the efficiency of reducing the friction of conversion of energy in the body to useful biological energy, once you reduce that from fasting, and that's why there's an adjustment phase. And once that kind of picks up, you're kind of like, okay, you don't feel hungry, you feel energized, you can do all these different things. So, and the body's enzymatic activity is freed up to start detoxifying or optimizing functions that have been downregulated because we're trying to deal with the matter of food. And I think that's where the healing process. So my theory was, if I could put more enzymes into the system while I'm fasting, maybe I could accelerate the results. And with thousands of clients, the anecdotal reports are, that's absolutely true. So now my 10-day fasts are usually about 5.
Wow. So what enzymes are we talking about specifically? You got to have a product for this, right? There's no way you don't.
Well, we cultivate a variety of products.
Yeah. I got two here with me that I take every day, the HCL Breakthrough and the P3OM. And I will say, as someone who historically has digestive issues, and also I got to give credit to my water fast on this one. My water fast. So I did 15 days water, 1 day juice at the beginning, 1 day juice at the end. So 17 days. And I would never recommend doing juice at the end like I did. That was the worst mistake I ever made. Right. But nonetheless, 17 days of a fast. And that really reset my digestion. But it's also that I've been taking HCL Breakthrough and P3OM regularly. And I'm not a supplement guy. I want to say that. Like, I'm typically not, but I can't discount the experience of using these. But with that being said, what products, enzymatic products, do you have to help facilitate this for those who are interested in fasting? So I've interviewed several people, Lauren Lockman, who I'm sure you're familiar with, who has Tanglewood Wellness Center. That's actually what piqued my interest at the beginning in these extended fasts. And I'm sure a lot of my audience is interested in fasting too, because I talk about water all the time. So yeah, different enzymes that we have.
Yeah. So back in 2003, when I went to the Mr. Universe, I tried to do a plant-based diet to compete at the Mr. Universe using meat-eating mentality and got myself into trouble, gained 42 pounds of fat and water in 11 weeks. And met a doctor. His name was Dr. Michael O'Brien, who had done fasts of up to 80 days. He had recovered from cirrhosis of the liver. He recovered from terminal cancer, a colon cancer. He had facilitated the healing of an infinite number, I don't know how many clients or whatever. And he was one of the most remarkable, healthy, vital senior citizens. And he told me and explained to Matt and I about the role of enzymes and probiotics, that these were the workers of the body and that we had a limited supply. And he referred to Dr. Edward Howe, who wrote Enzyme Nutrition and Food Enzymes for Health and Longevity. And he allocated that that was one of the reasons he was so vital and one of the discoveries that he made by reading this. So we went about and started using high doses of enzymes and probiotics in our own lives. I recovered from that in 6 months, got my body back, got my health back, but I felt extremely much better. And I was doing that I went to a raw food diet. So during that time, I stayed on a raw food diet.
Raw food bodybuilder.
Yeah. I'm probably the only guy to compete at the world championships on a raw food diet, which I did in 2007 as an experiment. Not to recommend that to people, but it can be done.
Yeah.
But enzymes are the key component because enzymes convert your food. You know, if you're eating protein, you don't need protein. You need amino acids, right? You need and those feed the bacteria cultures, and the bacteria cultures manufacture either energy units or building blocks. It's a symbiotic relationship, and enzymes accelerate that process, improve the efficiency of that process. And humans have a pancreas that's about four times larger than any other species relative to body weight, because we eat all the cooked food, processed food, chemical food, which requires more enzymatic production. And I believe that's one of the reasons that we accelerate or lose enzymatic pathways. So individuals have enzymatic strengths, and there's four main categories of enzymes: proteolytic enzymes, which break down protein; lipolytic enzymes, which break down fats; amylase or amylytic, which break down carbohydrates; and cellulase. Now, there are a whole other bunch of types of enzymes, and you can get into systemic enzymes, and you can get into animal enzymes and plant enzymes and cultured enzymes. We use cultured enzymes because they're anywhere from 100 to 1,000 times more potent than something you would find in a fruit or vegetable or an animal extract. And these four main categories are relative to things that we talk about in the book, because some people who are, say, better selected for a ketogenic diet will be pretty good at processing proteins and pretty good at processing fats, particularly. So they'll have their body naturally produces a lot of lipolytic enzymes and pretty good with proteolytic enzymes. Someone like myself, well, genetically, I don't do well on high levels of fats because I don't produce enough of lipolytic enzymes. However, I do pretty good on protein, and I do really good on carbohydrates. Now, what's interesting about that is Matt, my business partner, is completely inverted to that. He does really well on fats and really poor on carbohydrates. So you can imagine the arguments that we had early on in our career. But when we start to realize, and then eventually genetics began to confirm it, we started to do observationally coaching thousands of clients around the world, is that people were predisposed to certain type of diets because of the enzymatic capacity of that person. Now, that enzymatic capacity could be genetic. It could also be related to the microbiome. They might have changed their microbiome from what a diet is best for them. And the other thing is, it could be the way that they're enzymatically selected for. So, for example, when I would try ketogenic diets, at a certain point of fat intake, I would start to get fat in my stools. I'm like, I'm not breaking this up, right? Same as some people are eating too high of carbohydrates, they just gain fat by looking at a carbohydrate because they don't metabolize it. The body
gets insulin
stores into body fat. Okay. Well, oftentimes that's traced to exposure. Most people that can't handle very well in carbohydrates usually had high carbohydrate diets as a kid. A lot of refined sugars and stuff, right?
That's me, yeah.
Now, family, historically on my side, there's a lot of people in my family side that have gallbladder issues later in life. Well, gallbladder is the storage of lipolytic enzymes, fat enzymes. So I thought, oh, okay, so there's a genetic link. So basically, my body manufactures 25,000 different enzymes. And when it has to manufacture digestive enzyme, it has a variance of how good it is at that. So we started to build customized enzymatic formulations to improve the results for people who wanted to go to a diet that wasn't maybe naturally inclined for, or to optimize a diet for various outcomes. So we built an enzyme formulation, Masszymes, which is kind of covers all diets. It's high in proteolytic. We built one for the ketogenic diet, which is CAPEX, which is high protease, high fats with some bile salts. We created one for plant-based Vegzymes, which also works for people who have a hard time digesting fiber. A lot of people can't do a vegetarian diet because they say, I eat that much fiber, I don't feel good. That's because they don't have enough fibrous enzymatic activity to do that or the right microbiome. And then we develop gluten enzyme, an enzyme that's a dipeptidyl peptidase 4 at, you know, extremely high dosages. And what that does is that breaks down gluten because about a third of the population do not produce that enzyme anymore. So they have trouble with gluten.
Real quick, before we go off on a, I don't want to go off on a tangent on this, but I do have a question related to this. As someone who's steeped in this, in diet related stuff, nutrition, I'll just share my experience. So my wife and I both started eating at first Whole 30 and then transferred to paleo as we were recovering her from her lupus and rheumatoid arthritis, quote, autoimmune diseases that she's been symptom free mostly for the last 7.5 years now. And when I lived in Germany for a little bit because I played professional handball in Germany when I was training as an athlete from 2017 through 2019. And anytime I drank beer, even if it was organic beer, anything in the US or ate any type of bread or even sometimes pseudo grains, I would bloat really bad. But when I would eat it in Germany, because my teammates were all Germans and they eat a shit ton of bread and pasta and things like this, I had no issues. So I started to think, was it because of the glyphosate and the way that our grains are processed where they strip the minerals in the processing? What are your thoughts on that? That like maybe people don't have gluten intolerance to some degree and it's really poisoning due to glyphosate and or they're eating what could be considered like dead material.
Yes, it's one of the elements that is problematic without a doubt. I think RFK, who's running on that platform, has identified it as one of the contaminants that's disrupting American health among like atrazine and things like that. I would also say it's not isolated. I think that the various use of herbicides, pesticides, fungicides, and those correlations, which disrupt enzymatic activity on bugs, also the stripping away in the processing a part of the food that can eradicate first various minerals. For example, if you take magnesium, and we've demonstrated this in our lab, we're going to probably release some results on this. Magnesium will amplify the enzymatic activity in your digestive system by improving the productivity of the microbiome that you have present. And all of those herbicides, pesticides, fungicides, glyphosates, all that sort of stuff, they disrupt the enzymatic activity of animals because enzymes are essentially the difference between the living and the dead. The difference between stones, plants, and people is largely a part of the array of enzymes, chemical processes they can engage with that will feed the biology of the body. That's what it is. And so our theory of the case, based on people making massive recoveries from, you know, incurable conditions, there's all kinds of, you can read the Gonzalez reports of taking high levels of proteolytic enzymes. He tried to prove this to be ineffective and did over 12,000 clients.
Are we talking about Nick Gonzalez?
Yeah. So he was recovering all these people that couldn't recover using high proteolytic enzymes components. So why is that? Well, because they were able to break down the tissue that was causing the problem in the body and sucking up all the energy. That's a very politically correct statement for an unpolitically correct role. So what we said, well, if you can do this in healing situations, what would happen if you do mega dosages in the realm of performance? So turned out that allowed me to go to the world championships on 85 grams of protein a day on a raw food diet. Wow. So no drugs, no chemical enhancements.
Incredible.
What I was able to extract from that is like, well, the standard operation procedure for someone trying to have enough protein in the body to recover from high intensity weight training is usually 1 gram per pound of body weight. Now, there's variance 0.8, 0.1, 0.2 that generally increases as you age, which I believe is directly correlated to your capacity to convert protein into amino acids. So we started doing that. And even at 50, I went back there this year at 50. And was eating like 120 grams of protein a day and went to the world championships at 50, no drugs, no chemicals last year. So no. I'm not saying that to brag. What I'm saying is that we've proven this in the lab of real life, and we have demonstrable evidence in our lab, our biological lab in Bosnia. And so many people report the exact same thing that you did because a lot of those chemical agents are banned. The USDA allows 50 different chemicals on quote unquote organic food produce, not to mention the transport of that food. That food may be irradiated. It may be sprayed with chemicals on the transport process. So you're not getting live food. And if you're not getting live food and you have an enzymatic deficiency or suboptimal enzymatic activity, your capacity to break and digest that food, as well as the strain of grain. So a lot of the grain that we're using here is Durum semolina, and there's a wider range of grains that are used over there. So most of our passas and stuff come from Durum semolina. It's a genetically modified food that's profusely used in North America because, particularly in Canada, where I'm from, where it is extremely resilient to cold. So our model is flawed in the nutrition industry because it's based on protein, fats, carbohydrates, and a few minerals. And that's considered the RDA selection of diet, which is co-opted by, you know, political and corporate interests to put together something that would call the food pyramid or the healthy living stuff. And if you follow that, you will have at best average health, which is a diminishing level of life expectancy, a disability adjusted life expectancy of 60 years old, which will you'll be on somewhere between 4 and 18 different prescription pharmaceuticals with a compromised well-being, so that at the time you're 80, you will want to die. You will not want to live because the price of living is not worth. So if someone wants to be average and they want to follow the quote unquote science in the institutional regulations, and they want to condemn the use of enzymes and probiotics and fasting and all this stuff, fair enough. That's what you're betting on. I'm going to bet on the people that are on this side of the equation. And I don't care if people condemn me, but I think in this book, The Ultimate Nutrition Bible, we explain each one of these topics in detail as well. There's over 875 scientific, peer-reviewed research documentation that was, we had our own PhD go through those and validate the validity of those experiences, because there's a variance in the quality of an experience. I'm not of that level of academic accreditation that I can confidently disseminate what's a good study and what's a bad study. That's why we got her in to do that, so that we could take that information. It could be validated. It would pass the snuff test. And if people take the time to experiment it and try it, they'll see that they can improve and optimize any diet that they choose to wish. And they can probably be successful on any diet that fits their social or personal.
Spiritual, even in some cases, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's what I loved about the book. So I haven't, obviously I haven't read it yet.
That's a lot of
it's
reading.
A Bible.
We'll talk next year and see if we finish it, right?
Yeah, it's something that you, but I would love the way that it's designed, in that it's something that you can just flip open to any page and you're going to learn something. It's not like a continual journey. It's sort of a build your own diet / nutrition journey. And one of the things that I've been stuck with over the last few years is, I'll say for me, for a period of time, I was like, okay, without question, carnivore or animal-based is the diet that everyone's supposed to be on. And then what I couldn't get past, and you're a perfect example of that, is I have so many friends who are plant-based or are fruitarian or are leaning towards breatharian, where they're barely eating anything at all, that are thriving. And then on the flip side, I do have friends who are eating primarily meat or eating a animal-based diet, high fat, high protein, sort of ketovore, if you will. And I have people across all the spectrum of, quote, diets that I know who are healthy on these said diets. And likewise, I also have friends who were eating one way, switch to the extreme, and are like, I feel so much better on this. And then they're like, oh, I'm sure that plant-based is the way, or I'm sure that carnivore is the way, because I used to be that for X number of years and it failed. So I know I just threw a lot at you there, but let's start with this. What is it in those situations on both ends of the spectrum that causes someone to feel horrible after, you know, going on a diet for 10 to 15 years and then have to jump to the extreme on the other end and then be sure that this is the way? And it happens on both sides.
That's exactly why we wrote this book. There are pros and cons to every diet. And the thing is when you transit from one diet to another diet, what essentially you're doing is the reason why that new diet may, let's say it works and you feel great on it, oftentimes, that is because the new diet addressed the liabilities in the diet you had before. Conversely, that diet, which addresses those liabilities, will work for a while, but at some point, the cons within that diet, the limitations within that diet, are going to expose themselves and cause another series of problems. And so what we've seen is a circular aspect that the dieter or the diet advocate or, you know, diet experimenter gets on and falls into the trap of a charismatic leader of something and then misappropriates bell curve testimonials. And what is the bell curve? So if you take a bell curve of a standard deviation of people, you'll get 2% at the top end and 2% at the bottom end and, you know, 60% in the middle. And then, you know, they deviate out over, you know, three deviations each way and you get pretty much the bulk of people and you have these outliers. But what happens is the people that are advocating, say, the carnivore diet and the reasons why, I believe those to be legitimate. I believe their experience to be true. I believe the testimonials on their page and the advocates within that field and the people that promote products and services and information in that field actually had radical transformations because that diet, based on where they were in their life, had them fall in that top 2% of the bell curve. Conversely, I think the people who tried that diet, gained a bunch of weight, got a disease, felt terrible, had no energy, are on the inversion. They're on the bottom side of the 2%. So what do? They find another diet. And that diet addresses the limitations or liabilities within the diet before. And now they become the new advocate, the adversity person against the other person. Yeah. You have these diet gurus coming up period to period, and they're all yelling at each other and they're all telling the other guys full of crap and doesn't know what they're talking about and they're a total idiot and I tried that diet and almost killed me and I did this and now it works. And then 10 or 15 years later, you find out that they had to change their diet again because they found the holes once they got proved out of their own things. And it's really tough to avoid this, especially when your income and your identity becomes attached to a diet or to a group of people following a different philosophy. I'm a bodybuilder. It's essentially a physique cult, okay? And there are great things about bodybuilding for a longevity perspective. And at its highest level, it is absolutely detrimental to your health in order to be a professional bodybuilder who is not under drug testing. Showing up in competition is not good. Now, but is weight training one of the best things for longevity, glucose disposal, body fat maintenance, muscle mass maintenance? 100%. So you can't throw the whole industry out because of the extreme levels. And we need those extreme people to push the envelope, but we need to recognize, okay, that's an extreme aspect. Yeah. That's an extreme identification. And there's kudos to those people. We need those people to push the limits. But we also, for the average person, is we don't have the ability to discern the difference. That's why we wrote the book, Unbiased. Here's the pros, here's the cons. Maybe the best diet would be actually cycling through those different diets in different seasons. And I suspect that ultimately will be where people will end at. And we hope that with genetic testing and some of the testing we advocate inside of there, we'll be able to specifically know which thing we want to deal at what time in sequence. And I'm working on building an algorithm of how we identify that so that you would take a barrage of tests and say, okay, this is the diet for you right now. We're going to work on these things. This is the exercise program for you now. Then we're going to move to this phase and this phase of it. And systematically, I think we'll be able to add 20% to people's life span over the next 20 years.
Wow. That is an incredible projection. Incredible. We all know that Big Ag is poisoning our food supply and Big Pharma's so-called medicine is straight up poison. What most people aren't aware of, though, is that most supplements are also filled with artificial sweeteners, dyes, GMOs, glyphosate, and a host of other toxic ingredients, even many of the more natural supplements. My good buddy James Benefico dedicated his life to crafting the world's cleanest, most nutritious organic supplements after a pre-workout energy drink caused heart palpitations so severe that he almost landed up in the ER. Organic Muscle was born, revolutionizing sports nutrition by using exclusively non-GMO ingredients from USDA organic farms. Since then, tens of thousands of people, including myself, have leveled up their fitness and their health with Organic Muscle's award-winning natural pre-workout. There's no jitters, no heart palpitations, no itchy skin, just nourishing organic food and herb-based ingredients for clean, sustained energy, strength, endurance, and recovery. numerous studies have shown that tonka ali is the most effective herb in the world for naturally boosting testosterone levels. And we know that testosterone levels are depleting all over the world because of what's put in the food supply, what we're exposed to. Organic Muscle has the world's first fully organic tonka ali supplement. I only support and promote things that I actually use, and I can say I legitimately use Organic Muscle products. Use code FORWARD15 at checkout for 15% off at organicmuscle.com. So if I were someone, and I'd imagine this applies to a lot of the people who listen to this show, who has tried multiple diets, they're still confused because we're being barraged with information across the spectrum, right? Where there's people who, like we said, are certain that this is the diet. There's a lot of conflicting information on which diet is appropriate. If I were to jump in, grab your book, The Ultimate Nutrition Bible, what would I find with respect to the best diet for me?
First off, we're going to look at your goals. What is your desired outcome at this stage in your life? That's number one, because that's going to determine what you need to live long is not necessarily what you need to build muscle. Or if you need to lose body fat, that's not the same way as you want to enhance cognitive performance. So deciding, we identify five main goals inside the book. You pick that goal. Then you go, okay, what's the next step to do? I would recommend for most people to take a genetic test. Why? Because now you are going to reveal what are the things that are going to be advantages and obstacles in achieving your goal from a genetic factor. The next thing, you might want to take a microbiome test, because a microbiome test, I'm actually experimenting with some new ones. We hope to release one soon, because there's a lot of variance in the quality and the practitioner. You can get a practitioner to help you with this. And look at that as well as a hormone test, because a hormone test is going to say hormones are great ways to accelerate over genetic weaknesses. That's why people supplement with hormones as they get older, because you're wearing out. But when you add hormones to the system, you're exhausting resources at an exponential rate. That's why athletes who use a lot of drugs tend not to live long, because if they're not concording that to an influx of the nutrients and essential components with a biological bias towards their unique biology, they're going to run out of fuel and something's going to blow on the system early because they just got turbos on the car. So those three things, maybe a blood sugar test, like a HOMO IR, a DEXA scan. And now you're armed with, okay, now I know who I am and here's my goals. Based on that, it's most likely that maybe I'll do better on a ketogenic diet. And I'll use a specific example for myself. Now, I discovered this, most of it, by trial and error, and I've improved on it from these things, which took me 20 years. A person could probably get all of this data locked in and dialed in 20 days. Okay, so it took me That's 20 incredible. Years.
Thank you for distilling that amount into 20 days.
Yeah, exactly. So it'd be very easy. You could run those tests, get a doctor to do that. Bing, 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 bing. You know, maybe cost you a couple $1,000. Now you're armed exactly with where to go in your directions. And that's going to also determine what supplements are going to be right for you, because maybe you don't methylate this well. Maybe you have a poor enzymatic activity. Maybe you have a dysbiosis in your bacteria. Maybe you're low on certain hormones that can be, you know, improved through dietary selection or through the mitigation. Or maybe you have a crazy blood sugar that is going to respond better to a high fiber diet as opposed to a ketogenic diet. Okay. Don't know. You know, don't still think, oh, ketogenic diet, right? But then there's long-term advocates of ketogenic diet sometimes find that they become more insulin like they become more sensitive to blood sugar. And now that becomes a super problem when they go to the holidays or something and they go off their ketogenic diet. Then it's like, socially it's a problem. So we address all of those issues of how you figure that out. And then we also, the idea is to not get married too deeply to any philosophy, so that as you age and go through the stages of life, I'm in my 50s now, so I'm not a spring chicken. I'm not the same as I was when I'm 20. I'm not the same as when I'm 30. I'm not the same as I'm 40. And
I can't imagine what your energy was like as a 30-year-old, because as a 50-year-old right now, your energy levels are like off the charts. I don't know if Thanks. You like
just I try to tone it down. I try to tone it down for my podcast. We're working on that, but it's hard to. So you're going to change over time, and your goals and your lifestyle and your social requirements are going to change the time of it. So ideally you would want to build as much muscle as possible when your hormones are high early in life. I think the second phase of life, you want to build as much cardiovascular capability as you possibly can. And I think on the third phase that you want to continue to work on range of motion. Mm-hmm. If I was to look at from an exercise part married to your dietary intake is probably going to diminish as you get older. And then you want to supplement at the various levels for the deficiencies of your genetics, as well as your environment, as well as the liabilities within the diet that you have. And that's it. And that's what the book helps you walk through that systematically. So you can go and pick one stage for now, this stage for the next stage, that's for the century. But if I was designing an ultimate program to, like, you give me a 20-year-old right now, I'll take that person. And barring a tragic accident of some sort, I am confident they're going to live to healthily to 100 and probably beyond.
Wow.
Yeah. And I'm talking like, hey, I'm vital. I'm cognitive. I'm contributing to my community at 100 years old.
Like active, not in a wheelchair in a nursing Correct. Home at Correct. 100.
And I have three people on my street where I grew up who are centenarians. I always say centurions. I don't know.
What is centurion? Because I'm pretty sure that's a word.
Centurions. It's actually centurions.
I know, but what is like the first word you said? I still think
centurions are Roman soldiers. I always say that. This is probably a karmic hangover from another life. But anyways, or I've watched too many Roman sword and sandal movies. They all live to be over 100. All of them had a garden at home. All of them did physical exercise. All of them had a strong social circle. They all had a faith in divinity. Mm. And they had a reason to look forward. And one of them, she's still alive today. She's 106 years old. Now, she's obviously depleted and has a variety of problems. But what's fascinating when you go see her or talk to her or be around her is she's talking about the new pair of mittens she's got to meet, or there's a party coming up, or a social circle. And I think we underestimate the role of social components as we age, because life has to have meaning. Mm. Whatever we are, if you do not have meaning in your life, it doesn't matter what happens in life, you will not live long. There needs to be a reason that invigorates the biology to move forward. And that's why, you know, the way forward is why I love your podcast name, because what does that mean? That means there's an aspirational aspect at some aspect of the psychological level that is invigorating the reason why to do something. And the why is as important as the how.
Amen. Amen to that. You brought up centenarians, right? That's yeah. what they're called. Okay. Because there's, yeah. there's definitely yeah, not centenarians.
I know it's a weird name. I like centurions.
I do too. But I think it makes more sense, but that we're not talking about, what about yeah. both 100-year-old Roman soldiers, but,
yeah, that's cool.
That's like pretty that. Badass. Maybe there was, I don't know. But I'm reminded of this video that I've seen a couple of times where a lady is being interviewed and asked how she lived to be the age that she was. And I think she was like 102 or 101, something like that. Maybe she had just passed the 100 mark. And she talked about how she drinks a bunch of Diet Coke or Diet Pepsi or something like this. And she is very happy, joyful lady. What I want to ask with respect to that is, Do you address in the book the dogma of diets with respect to being so afraid to eat anything that is considered, quote, toxic? And I want to preface this by saying that my wife and I were there at one point, and then we started to realize, like, dude, we can't do anything in social settings now. Like, we can't do anything. We can't go to restaurants. We're too afraid that there's going to be seed oils there. It's not going to be organic farm-to-table food. And then we started sort of lightening up on that a bit. And we did go, I would say, the other end of the spectrum where we were indulging in that a little bit too much. And then that we turned out to be unhealthy. But we have a good balance now where overwhelmingly, especially when we're at home, we eat as close to nature as we possibly can and try to source most of our stuff locally and grow some of it in our garden as well. But then we do indulge sometimes and have what would be considered, quote, toxic by the natural health community. So what does the book talk about with respect to that?
Great question. Yeah, we do address that. And you're talking about a guy that was a raw foodist for 2 years and a bodybuilder at the same time. So I was a raw food bodybuilder. It doesn't really get much more restrictive than that.
Yeah. I can't think of anything more restrictive than that, actually.
And I remember going to a raw food festival and this kind of waif-like character walks up to me. This glazed look in his eye, and you know, the kind of hemp clothing and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, he's showing he's as organic and healthy and as restrictive as you possibly. And he looks at me and he goes, "What percentage of raw are you?" And I was like, oh my God, this is a cult. And I knew that if I didn't answer that question 100%, like, I don't know if like lightning from the gods was going to strike me down, or certainly I would be disavowed from my social community, which is a very big threat on the amygdala, identification and where you fit in the social structure. It's something that comes with the biology of our brains. And
that's what happened with COVID. That's why people have the tendency.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And other people, yeah, very quickly, family members, you know, authorities in their lives, medical people, the whole nine yards. We witnessed that going on, the need to be part of the tribe as a safety mechanism, as opposed to discernment and rational thinking. Yep. And some of the smartest people became the most captured because they have the biggest identification with the institutions that 100%. Made those statements. And that's the shocking part, because it doesn't matter how smart you are, you're still prone to these identifications. Those identifications have just been more sophisticated and maybe even more canonized than the common person. I wrote a book with one of the girls that we use a lot of advanced biohacking tech or biological optimization technology. I don't like the word hacking. I like biological
optimization. I'm so happy you said that, because I completely agree.
Yeah, hack is always has an, a consequence, unexpected consequence. And optimization is building upon something that's already going in the body. Her and I wrote a book called Staying Alive in the Toxic World. And it was when I was coming out of that group and going back to the same thing as the fasting mentality, which we started this with, was, is I realized it wasn't the toxins, because I was looking at a grand universal theory. It goes back to that awesome word. Like, it wasn't the toxins that I was exposed to that was the problem. It was the capacity of my system to handle them.
Amen.
And what happens is people who are intoxified, and that's very easy in today's world. I'm not underestimating or minimalizing the amount of toxic exposure we have, that you get to a point and you start to reduce the exposure to toxins in your life. And you go through that phase of, you know, we got to change the mattresses. We got to change the paint. We can't, we got to only drink out of glass. You know, we can never have sugar again. We can never have this, whatever food again, or this chemical or reagent. And, you know, we got to get toxic people out of our lives, and toxic, and this obsession with toxins starts to happen. You know, you got walking around a gas mask and electromagnetic suit on, and you can take this as far, and I've seen it taken as far as it gets. Like, it's like a whole,
we've been there.
It's fun. But at a certain point, you cannot restrict your way to a great life. You can restrict your life to a certain point, but there is a point where now the restrictions become the toxin. Because it poisons the joy of life. It also may be creating a limitation, again, as a hyper-restrictive diet. And I am the master of hyper-restrictive diets, just for people to understand. I'm good at it, right? You got to be able to expand that. And I believe that a healthy, robust person, it should be able to expand their options as opposed to limiting. Now, there may be a restrictive period, and I'm an advocate of restrictive period, dietary regulation, discipline around things, the removing of chemical aspects, while bolstering your capacity to manage those toxins inside your body related to your genetic and physiological capabilities. And that you can always improve on, and that's where biological optimization technology comes in. Once you've got your diet and lifestyle down, you can't supplement your way out of a bad diet, and you can't biohack your way out of a stupid diet either. You can BS yourself, and there's lots of people out there spreading the manure on the population. But the reality is those two things can dial in. And then if you're using this tech to optimize your capacity to detox, then you're onto that. So, for example, I have a HOCAT machine in my house. HOCAT machine is, it's a steam capsule. It has electromagnet, like, it's got PEMF in it. It's got lasers and lights in it. It's got ozone that comes in, CO2. It's got oxygen on it. This thing is dope. I don't know of a better detoxification pathway. So when I go down to my buddy's house, Paul Check, and we hang out all day, what do? He gets out, as soon as you walk in the door, he's getting out the Nick bags, and you're smoking big bags of smoke and herbs.
Volcanoes.
Yeah, we're doing the volcanoes like crazy, right? You know, and I'm like buzzing. I'm like, woo, I'm just flying, you know? And then we go in the steam sauna, we detox that, we jump in the cold plunge, we have a meal, and then we sit down to the podcast. Like, we go through a 4 or 5 hour ritual before we even get to the podcast. And it is the best time ever. Now, people will say, well, why are you smoking nicotine or doing this in a vape bag or something? That's unhealthy. Yeah, okay. Yes, but there is also some benefits to it as well. So there's a trade-off, but how am I going to remove the detractors and improve the benefits? And so this allows the camaraderie, the joy of life, the non-demonization of the social components of food and all the wonderful creations that all the great chefs that come out there. Yeah, so I'm going home for the holidays. I'm going to eat things that I don't normally eat. I'm going to do things I don't normally do. And when I get out of it, I'll engage in my detoxification program and I'll bolster that till I'm at the next level. It's just really that simple. And when you have the tools and the ability, we talk about all these in the book, then it's easy. Now you go, oh, I got a tool for everything.
Incredible. Yeah, it's because I've been there before too, right? Like extremely restrictive. And I found that obviously with the caveat or the scenarios where you're being restrictive with an intention with respect to goals, which I want to talk about next, but it's unhealthy. I would argue that it's more unhealthy for your body to be that restrictive and that afraid of ingesting toxins, especially because as I learned on my fast and as I was starting to learn prior to this, and connection to something greater than yourself is much more important than all the things you mentioned. Water, breath, I would say sunlight, and then movement are much more important. I don't want to say much more important, holding like nutrition and diet to not be important, but just as important, maybe more important than nutrition and diet. And it's like so many people in the holistic health space shame themselves and almost feel judged if they're around their friends, like, hey, I don't typically eat like this, but like, or if someone comes over, my wife and I used to do this. If we have a snack for our kids, that's something other than what, you know, we're supposed to be, we like have to explain ourselves. We feel the need to say, oh no, we just have this. They only do it like once a week. That's the reason that we have this snack here. And it's like, screw that. It's ridiculous. It's unhealthy.
You know, it's funny. Cause if most, like, I love to eat and I love snacking and I love social occasions and I meet a lot of my friends at my social occasions. So if they come to my social occasions, it's an absolute food bonanza all the time. So they must think, God, does this guy eat like this all the time? I hope they do. Cause it's kind of a funny, they're like every day I'm kind of eating kind of really boring beans and salad. And you know, it's pretty bare bones. But when I'm out with my friends or I'm going out to a social occasion, all bets are off. I'm going hog wild. And I feel confident in doing that, but it did. It took a long time to get to that place and to validate what you're saying. Cause I came to the same conclusions on air, water, exercise and sunlight. And here's how I did it. Well, if you shut off the sun, forget it. It's all over. Everything stops. Okay. How long can you go without eating? Well, you know that you can go at least 17 days, right? How long can you go without water? Not that long, maybe a week, 10 days. How long?
Some people do extreme dry fast, but like that's extreme, right?
Yeah.
Extreme.
Yeah. And so you could maybe a week, let's say, or 10 days or whatever. How long can you go without oxygen? Well, hold your breath and find out, you know, not long. So right there, you can see that those things are precursors to what you're eating dietary wise. So wouldn't it make sense that people get those things in line, proper hydration, proper breathing and movement every single day? Because if you tie a person to a bed, you see this when people get sick or having an accident, like they waste, like every single biomarker that they have just goes in the toilet, right? You could feed them chips every day if they're moving and breathing and hydrating in a 30-day period. If you don't move, you're not going to have the same damage. So you got to put things in perspective.
Do you think that perspective, I'm assuming in large part it's shared by Matt with respect to the sunlight and in the breath and everything, do you think that perspective is what sort of informed your process to create this book in a way that is ironically a quote dietary slash nutrition book that is fundamentally anti-diet dogma? Because
yes,
so many other people who write a nutrition book, and there's like a gazillion nutrition books coming out every year, write it from a dogmatic perspective.
Sure.
And yours is the anti-diet dogma book.
Yes. Yeah, we call it the end of diet wars. We want to end the diet wars because I think there's a lot. I think if you look at, for a fun word, all the dietary dogmatics, all of them, to my nature, to my experience, have good intentions and have legitimately valuable insights and information to provide to a certain segment of the population. And I don't want to throw them under the bus because they're out there, they're taking the arrows, they're doing the research, They've maybe corrected a bunch of them, their own problems and a variety of people. And kudos and salutations to them. Good job. Congratulations. But if I'm sitting in the green room with any one of those at the public events and I'm asking about things, I can ask them, well, tell me about the clients that it didn't work for. And they all have a story about the client that they didn't get that bugs them. And for most of them, it bothers them. Now, some will obfuscate it. Some will hide it. Some will say that they didn't do it properly or they didn't follow the program exactly or whatever. But if they're honest enough, and usually it takes a while for them to get to that point, you get to get a little older and a little wiser and realize, I don't know that, you know, the older you get, the realize that you know less and less. And I think that's a good, that's the earmark of wisdom. You go, wait a second. There's a lot of different people over the course of my life that's produced great results. I've seen guys on carnivore diets that are absolute killers. I've seen people that it's almost killed. I've seen plant-based athletes that are remarkable. You know, you think of a guy like Nate Diaz and his endurance as a vegetarian, or all these, you know, endurance athletes particularly. And I think it has to do with oxygen and, acidity inside of the body. And certain people go for that if they get it down right. And it's very hard for explosive athletes to be successful in a ketogenic diet, let's say. I think there's principles within each one of these diets that are universal. So we wanted to capture those, but we also want to capture the variances within that. So that the person, there's always going to be diet gurus. There's always going to be diet cults, and they serve a purpose. But we need to arm people to go in and extract the good parts and discoveries that person has and throw away the stuff that doesn't work.
And take what resonates and leave what doesn't.
And that's the thing that we want people to arm people. That's what we give this to. It's like, listen, we're not telling you how to do everything. We're showing you these are the results. These are the arguments. These are the research. These are the things to think about so that you can cultivate the perfect diet for your life, your goals, your lifestyle, your genetics. That's it. And you'll never get screwed or fall into the trap of dietary cultism. And I think if we can do that, now we can push all the boats up because people can properly assess what's right for them.
Beautiful. How much did you and Matt used to argue about diet? I'd imagine since you are literally opposite end of the spectrum on things and like.
It was a solid decade before we could even call a truce. But, you know, iron sharpens iron, steel, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So the point of the matter is because we were both committed to helping the world, because we wanted to make a difference, because we both had a passion for this industry and what it did and the differences. There's no amount of money that makes me feel better than seeing the testimonial for someone that transformed their life. I got a lady the other day, 67 years old, that was listening to her podcast last year, and she got into weight training, and she goes, you know, I was averse to it. I didn't want to do it. I thought it was crazy. I got into it. And she goes, I've been doing this for the last year and a little year and a half. She just sent us a testimony the other day. She goes, I can't, my friends are shocked. I feel great. I'm so glad that I did it. There is no amount of money in the world that can give me that feeling. And I think everybody that's in this industry understands that. And so I just want more and more of that feeling. My needs are taken care of. Matt's needs are taken care of. And those arguments allowed us to expose the flaws in our thinking. I don't think this book would have been written if we didn't have dietary differences to the extreme level that we do. We also, Matt's a real data guy. He's a questioner, and I'm more an intuitive. How do I feel?
How you feel? Got it.
I'm a feel guy, and that's another element between the two of us that we've been
able to complement of each other. That's incredible. Do you think that went into your like product development too? Like sort of poking holes in each other's dietary flaws, if you will, or nutritional flaws with your different philosophies. Led to your product development to come up with things like, as you say, and you mentioned this on your show with Luke Story, talking about someone who, for example, is eating a certain way for spiritual reasons, but they may not be constituted in a way biochemically and energetically to be eating that way, despite wanting to for spiritual reasons. So then they have products that you guys have synthesized or created rather. I don't like the synthesis yeah. word because that implies like a mechanistic anyway, but products that you have created that they can use. So let's say someone who typically is vegan or vegetarian, what are we, you know, in general, this very broad brushstroke across the board, seeing in terms of their deficiencies that yeah. you then have products for to supplement in that respect?
First and foremost, the number one challenge that you're going to have on a plant-based diet, I believe, there's three different areas that you're going to have to probably address. That is one, insufficient amino acids. And not, you can get all the amino acids, let's blow up another dogmatic thing. All of the essential amino acids are readily available on a plant-based diet.
I say that as someone who's not on a plant-based diet.
They have all the essential fats. So that whole complete protein stuff, that's a bunch of garbage. Mm-hmm. Okay. But what happens is because most of the plants that we eat now have been conventionally produced for 100 years, the protein content of that has eroded to such a significant amount, you can't get sufficient amount of amino acids on a plant-based diet, especially if you're in more of an athletic model, like an endurance athlete or a strength athlete. And so what happens, and then there's another issue with protein. If you eat a plant-based diet that is low, like that's more towards a starchy vegetarian diet, like hard carbohydrate, you oftentimes will have blood sugar regulation issues. Mm. So you want to supplement with protein. I eat plant-based protein. I have a plant-based protein supplement every single day. I also do, now I found that using a full spectrum, like a branched chain amino acids, pre-workout or post-workout is very helpful. You know, 10 grams before, 10 grams after really helps on the recovery factor, particularly with leucine, like a high leucine amount on anabolic features on that. But that protein is going to help stabilize blood sugar. Because if you get on the starchy train, vegetarians will eat a lot of like junk vegetarians and junk vegans. And I think that's the biggest problem. When you eat a junk vegan, you start losing muscle mass, you start riding the blood sugar train, you just create a dysbiosis in the bacteria. So what is the habit? Protein, fiber. Fiber, I'm claiming it now. I'm the fiber king. I am the fiber, fiber king.
Not liver king, you're the fiber king.
I eat so much fiber, it's insane. I have a theory that different types of fibers work with different types of microbiome, and you want to have the right fiber for your microbiome, even if you don't eat enough fiber. There's going to be certain plants that are good for you and certain plants that you just can't have. So I eat a ton of plants. I have a salad every day that would freak people out. It's so big. And I have greens with every meal, and I love it, and I feel good. And I have the genetics that I don't get filled up easily. My stomach doesn't tell my brain soon enough. So my tendency to overeat is much higher. My tendency for blood sugar variance is not good. And I have cardiovascular risk on both levels of cardiovascular. So if I ate an animal-based diet, I'd probably do pretty good on a bodybuilding style diet till I was 70 or 80 and I die of a heart attack or a stroke. So by on a high fiber, high protein, plant-based diet, I'm able to reduce my chances of stroke and heart disease, stabilize my blood sugar, and still be able to be an athlete. And then the one element that I do add to that is I supplement with a company called Synergy, which is probably the best algae-based essential fatty acid that you're not getting on a vegetarian diet. They make this brownie chocolate stuff, like it's like a cream that you just squeeze out of the jar. It tastes amazing. It's so good. And that addressed my essential fatty acids, which was something that Matt was poking at me early on in my plant-based diet. I didn't have enough essential fatty acids. So now that affects hormonal formation and things like that. And I'm more estrogen dominant than androgen dominant or testosterone dominant. So I have to be very mindful of too much estrogens inside of the diet. So making sure that I have that essential fatty acid. If I do it, I feel great. If I don't do it, I don't feel great. So I know the variance between the two.
Well, that makes sense because you're also intuitive and you're really in feel with your body on what it feels like too.
Correct. And that's the advantage of bodybuilding, I think. Anybody, and I recommend that everybody do a fitness bodybuilding physique contest of some sort, not because you want to get a trophy. But when you follow that restrictive period of time and that training and stuff, number one, you develop capabilities that you never knew you had and discipline you never had. But as your body fat diminishes, you start to become hyper aware of the variance of foods and things and how it affects you. And that's an experiment that gets you in touch and in feel and aware, instead of just relying on phones and, you know, external quantitative measures. Because we have an evolutionary biological observation machine that is disengaged most of the time. And if we leverage that in, you know, meditation, contemplation, introspection, and observation, and fasting, and these things allow you to become hyper aware of all these little nuances in my body, in your body. And I think everybody has that capability, and I'd like people to discover it.
Amen. Yeah. Wow. I could listen to you for freaking days. This is incredible. So I want to circle back to goals and then sort of end with fasting, and then we'll share a little bit more about the book and where people can find it. And with respect to having success with various diets, how important do you think it is to set goals? Because a lot of people will sort of just say, oh, I'm going to do this diet, but they don't have a specific and measurable goal in place in order to achieve the results that they want. And what we know, and I'm sure you'd share these sentiments about the mind and the power of intention, is when you actually set that intention prior to engaging with something, it has a tremendous impact. Not to go off on a huge tangent here, but the two extended fasts that I've done, one, I had a very, very clear intention beforehand. The second one, I was leading a class for people and I was just like, shit, well, I got to do it because I'm leading this class. And the first fast, the longer one, was incredible. The shorter one, which was only a five or six day, was not. It was awful. And it was I really think it was because of the lack of intention, ergo the lack of goals beforehand. So how much do you think goal setting plays into this?
100%. Without a vision for the future, the people will perish. If you do not have a reason to do something, you will fall prey to your evolutionary and biological tendencies. And right now, those are being manipulated through mass marketing and distraction devices that are disrupting your capacity to stay on track. So a goal becomes a discerning directional component that allows you to identify what is leading me in the direction towards the achievement of this goal. And what is a distraction? And in a world of distractions, I think it's essential. The other thing I'd say that goals to expand on that, the second thing, and we talk about this in the book, is having a goal when you achieve the goal. I can't tell you how many people get to the shape that they want to be in, and then they go back to the old thing, and 6 months later, they're off. The average person in America has been on 6 different diets, and 97% of people gain all of the weight that they get got started with and more within 3 years of doing a diet. Okay, so we have to own that as an industry, and not setting that next goal when with close to the achievement of one to the other is the biggest mistake. Because for a set point in diet, it takes about 18 months for your body to reset. So let's say your goal is to get to, you're 220 pounds and you want to be 195 pounds. Okay. And it takes you 6 months to get to 195 pounds. You're going to have to hold that 195 pounds for 18 months for your body to say, oh, this is my new set point. And then you build what I call like warning signs. So when I get too far above that point, when I get to 195, my set point's 185. If I hit 195, the sirens go off. When I hit 190, there's a like, hey, dude,
pay attention,
slow down. When I hit 195, it's like all hands on deck. Now, conversely, if I was to compete, I'll drop down to just over 170 pounds.
How tall are you, by the way?
I'm a 5'8 on a really good day if I just had a chiropractic adjustment.
or you didn't sit down too much that day. Spend a good amount of time with Paul Check that day and you're 5'10.
That's right. Exactly.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So goals are essential.
Yeah. I think, again, going back to my fasting experience, it's funny you brought up the weight 220 and then 195. Funny enough, on my 17-day fast, I went from 225-ish. I think I fluctuated in between like 218 and 226. I'm 6 foot two. And I got down to 195 in that 196, 195 in that 17 day span. But the biggest thing for me, I did have some physical pain and things like this that went away. I'd been dealing with some hip issues, some lower back issues, especially when I would do cleans or deadlift or anything like that. But the biggest change that I noticed is that I had to face a lot of stuff that I thought I had dealt with before that there was no distractions for. And then on the back side of that, the spiritual bliss that I experienced doing nothing, like not trying to, not doing a certain type of breathwork routine, doing Qigong meditation, none of that stuff, just sitting and doing absolutely nothing. The feeling of bliss. One of my friends told me, who's done quite a few extended fasts, that I will fall in love with the feeling of emptiness. And that is literally what I experienced, just being empty of all of it. The emotions.
Oh, good.
Yeah. I see you nodding your head. It's like, yes, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
100%. Yeah. It's so, good.
For you, what did, on the more metaphysical, psycho-spiritual, emotional side of things, fasting, what did that show you?
It increases your connection to source energy. That you start to, when you're not stuffing yourself with food or thinking about food or directing food, you free up a bunch of energy and you go through the boredom phase. Like, what the hell do I do next? Like, all this free time. And then you become aware of how you distract yourself in day-to-day life. And then when you remove all that, you get to a point, a still point. And in the still point, you're like, you become aware of the élan vital, the life force within you, this pulsing, energetic thing that's running everything, independent of your mind, independent of your feelings. And as opposed to be drowning out by all the sensory stimulation that we go for, it now starts to become, we start being able to hear it, see it, feel it.
Palpable.
And that is existence itself. It is the force that makes life. If you don't want Star Wars, why do I like that as a kid? Whether you're talking about chi, whether you're talking about all the metaphysical components, prana, you name it. All of the great religions that have gone through these processes have identified this driving energetic force that is a substrate below the biochemistry, below the cognition, and below the emotions. And you get an opportunity to tap into that and amplify it. And it is invigorating to a state of, for many people, euphoria.
Is that why you want to do the 40 day?
Yeah.
That's the same. It has nothing to do with detoxing from anything for me. No, like almost became ironically addicted to that feeling when I experienced it. And I stopped my fast because I had to drive 14 hours back home to my wife and my kids. My wife, thank goodness, afforded me the opportunity to be away from my kids for a little bit for that fast, because I'd been wanting to do it for a while. But I was like, man, I feel like I can keep doing this forever. I feel incredible. I feel incredible. Yeah. This connection to myself, to God, source, creator, to all that is, was palpable. Just like you said, you really do feel it on a deep level. And I figured that's what it was. I'm like, there's no way this guy has any like thing that he needs to detox from necessarily. It's got to be a spiritual pursuit.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's powerful. And I think that's why historically that's been used throughout history.
Yeah.
It's a healing modality.
Yeah. This has been an awesome conversation, Wade. And I really appreciate the wealth of knowledge that you and Matt both are in Bio-Optimizers. Your products are incredible. So where can, aside from in the show notes, so for those who are interested in the Ultimate Nutrition Bible, the link for that will be in the show notes. There's also what is the Ultimate Nutrition System. So is that coincide with the book? And that's the link for that will also be in the show notes as well. But can you talk just a little bit as we're closing up about the Ultimate Nutrition System?
Yeah. Well, when we started this, I think we had 1100 and some pages. So we took a nutrition book, which is 200 pages, a little over 200 pages. We took that out of the book, like a supplement guide to explain all the different supplements and what they do, what, you know, it's not a product pitch component. It's just explaining what all this stuff does. We also have a reference guide that's 875 scientific references. So we did the summaries of those studies in that for people who need the research information and want to dive into that. We've got three cookbooks, a carnivore cookbook, a keto cookbook, and a plant-based or paleo cookbook and a plant-based cookbook inside there. And I think we have Sick to Superhuman as well, which is more of the biological optimization tech side and how to attack that. That those all come as video components and then or as like digital downloads. And then we have a video course where we took the entire course and went to the Hollywood Hills and we filmed it in high definition, really attractive stuff where Matt and I walk through each of the books so that you can listen to it on audio. You can watch it on TV, whatever their mode, or you can read the book or just use the book as a, the idea here is to create the ultimate reference guide so that you have something that will arm you in any conversation with any person in the world where you can create relatability or be able to, you know, sniff out the dogma that might be coming your way.
Beautiful. Wade, thanks again for joining me, man. This was an awesome conversation. It's cool that we connect on so many things. And I always get excited when I have another fellow athlete that I can talk to and also someone who's interested in fasting. So this is awesome. We'll have to have you back on again.
Thank you so much. I love that. And hopefully next time we'll be in Austin when we do it.
Amen.
You bet.